How to simplify your life. Why are you laughing? Because you don't need to simplify yours, or is it a question that you've actually asked yourself? Is there anyone feeling that life has gotten too complicated? Two or three of you out there, I guess. Would you like to get rid of the clutter in your life? Is there any of us that doesn't struggle with clutter? I seem to spend my life trying to get rid of clutter. And every day it comes in one form or another. If it's not the grocery bags with all the jars and the stuff that you have to figure out how to get rid of, it's the mail and all sorts of boxes and packages and things that keep coming. But if our lives are really cluttered to the point that we are feeling a little desperate and drowning at times, then something's wrong. Something is very radically wrong. What is it exactly? Well, I think if you analyze it, it probably comes down to the fact that you've never really figured out what you want in life. Aristotle said, all men seek happiness. I would agree. Everybody wants to be happy. But where we seek it and how we seek it, of course, makes a very big difference. Sometimes young people come to me with a question, very often they come to me with this question, but how can I know the will of God? I really want to be a good Christian. I want to learn to know God. I want to do His will, but how in the world do I find out what it is? And usually when a student, a young person, asks me a question like that, my first question to them is, what do you really want in life? And it is amazing how few young people have a ready answer for that. They might have a ready answer, but one which they might hesitate to state. They might, if they were honest, say, well, lots of money. That's what I really want, because if you have lots of money, then you can have anything else that you want. But very few people can answer that question instantly. What do you really want? Well, my next question to them is, do you really think you want the will of God? Why should you bother to be interested in knowing what the will of God is unless you want it? And of course, they come back at me at the question, well, how in the world can I know whether I want it until I know what it is? Well, that's where trust comes in, isn't it? That's where faith comes in, because I don't think God is going to give you a blueprint for your life. That's another question I hear. How can I find God's will for my life? I don't think you can. I thought I had found God's will for my life when I knew between my junior and senior years at college that God was calling me to be a foreign missionary. I had hoped for 20 years before that God would call me to be a foreign missionary, but I wasn't really very sure that it wasn't merely a notion of my own and not actually the call of God. So it was between my junior and senior year that I really felt that God confirmed that call, and I thought that that was a lifetime non-negotiable, permanent status. I would be a foreign missionary. And I loved that prospect. Well, in the providence of God, I spent only 11 years as a foreign missionary, and God had some other things in mind. For example, standing in a podium like this, talking to a group of people, never once crossed my mind. Back in those days, I expected to live under a thatched roof in some very remote corner of the South American jungle for the rest of my life. So I tell people, God is not likely to give you a blueprint or a map of your life. He will give you the next step. You never know what is going to be involved when you make a commitment to Jesus Christ, or when you make a commitment to anything else, right? How many of you are married? May I see your hands? Did you really know what you were getting into? And when you came down that aisle looking so gorgeous and feeling so wonderful and seeing that handsome face of that most beloved person up there at the front waiting for you, and you went through those staggering promises, absolutely staggering if you think about them. Maybe you didn't think about them a whole lot. But you made those promises in front of witnesses and before God, and you really didn't know whether it was going to be for better or for worse, in sickness or in health, for richer or for poorer. And if it turns out to be worse, sickness and poorer, then you begin to wonder how you ever got yourself into a situation like this. Well, Jesus is not guilty of false advertising, and he tells us that if we want to be his disciple, there are three things we have to do. We have to give up our right to ourselves, we have to take up our cross, and we have to follow him. If we stop and think for even 5 minutes about each of those conditions, we would certainly realize that there will be some unexpected things. We don't really know what will happen if we give up our right to ourselves. That sounds pretty frightening, doesn't it? And in this day and age, it's a pretty hard concept to get across. I don't think it was an easy concept in Jesus' day, and that's why he didn't have very many followers. But today, we are being bombarded from all sides with the world's notion of how to find happiness. You gotta do your own thing. It's your life, it's your body. If it feels good, do it. And don't let anybody tell you what to do. That's what the world says, and Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, you must give up your right to yourself. That means a total relinquishment. Just hand it all over and say, Lord, here I am, all of me for you forever. Do anything you want with me. And then he says, take up the cross. The cross is an instrument of torture. And he says, follow me. Where are you going to take me, Lord? Trust me, he says. Trust me. And I'm thankful that I can look back over most of my 65 years. I guess I can't really remember the first two or three, but I can look back over as many years as I remember, and there's never been one word of God's promises that he hasn't fulfilled. And there has never been one single time when I have obeyed him that it has not led ultimately to joy. Nor has there ever been a time when I have disobeyed him and found happiness by disobedience. But what does this have to do with how to simplify your life? Well, it has everything to do, because you have to make up your mind, first of all, what do you want? Now, maybe you thought you had what you wanted. Maybe you thought you had made up your mind, and so you went after that, and whatever it was you wanted, but whether it was a nice house, or living in Massachusetts, or getting married, or having children, those were the things that you may have dreamed about, and you got them. And then what? Did you find soul satisfaction in any of those things? Whatever the route was that you took might have turned out to be the wrong road. And your life seems to be getting more and more cluttered and more complicated and less satisfying. And what does God have to say to us about this? Well, before we look at four things in the scripture that I think will help us, I just want to tell you how very immediate this question is to me. I try to speak about things that God is speaking to me about, things which are fresh and very real in my experience. Whenever people ask me what they can pray for me, I always say, please pray that the Lord will make me a doer and not merely a talker or a writer. It's very easy to talk about the Lord, to write about the Lord, to sing about the Lord, but it's another thing to put it into what my old teacher used to call shoe leather. She wanted to see Christianity in shoe leather, very practical ways. So this question of clutter has been on my mind a lot. Just last Thursday, I went with Lars to Palm Beach, Florida, where his mother lives, and his sister was down there helping his mother try to clear out all the accumulations of years because she's going to be moving out of that house and into a retirement home. And I see that there are a few white heads in the audience tonight. Maybe you've already done that. And I'm in that process constantly. I think I've been in that process ever since I was about 20. By the time I was 20, I realized I was mortal and I was not going to last forever, and there was no point in accumulating stuff constantly. So my life has been a matter of trying to get rid of clutter. Well, it was unbelievable what went out of that house, load after load, to a charity work, to the garbage dump, to the thrift shop. I don't know where all it went. And as far as I could tell, I wasn't there when most of it went out, but the house looked pretty much like it did when I visited there before. And I don't mean it was a mess, but it still looked perfectly civilized. It looked to me as though everything you could possibly need was there. And I thought, now what in the world were all these truckloads of stuff that went out of there? You know what I mean? Well, then that was Thursday. And on Friday, we went to a women's conference in Fort Lauderdale. Now, mind you, this was a one-night thing in a hotel. And these women were coming from Fort Lauderdale or from Miami. They were not coming from California, and they were not coming for two or three nights. You wouldn't believe the baggage. I mean, that lobby, you couldn't get through the lobby to get to the registration desk for the luggage. You would have thought everybody was going at least on a two-week cruise. And they had just come a couple of miles, you know, some of them, and maybe however far Miami is from Fort Lauderdale is not very far. But anyway, it was for one night. And I thought, what do these women think they're going to do with all these outfits? I mean, how many can you wear in 24 hours? They were coming on Friday afternoon, and they were leaving on Saturday afternoon. Well, I didn't ask. I've always decided, always felt that when you travel, and you look around in the airport, you can pick out the people that travel a lot because they don't have very much. And people who don't travel always take everything, the kitchen sink. Then that was Friday. Well, Sunday, my husband and I were still in that hotel, and lo and behold, they had what every hotel in the world has now, and we find it very distressing. You can never get anything but a brunch on Sunday morning. And that brunch presents, my guess would be about 95 separate dishes. Why? I mean, who needs an array like that? It's enough to give you a nervous breakdown trying to decide what you're going to have. You know, I've had to go through so many of those things so many times that now I just walk through the whole line, I look at everything, and then I start over and I pick out maybe three things. That was Sunday morning. Well, Sunday afternoon we got home to Magnolia, and there was a clutter of mail because we had been gone since Wednesday. How do we deal with this? We live in a cluttered society. First of all, I would say what we need is a unifying principle. Something to bring everything together under one heading. Something to unite my heart. And one of the Psalms says, "Unite my heart to fear thy name." Do you have a divided heart? Do you feel as though you're going in all directions at once? Well, in Psalm 27, verse 4, the psalmist says, "One thing I ask of the Lord. This is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life." Now, I want you to notice that he says all the days of my life. He doesn't say that I may dwell in the house of the Lord when I die. Did you ever think about that? I confess that I've always connected that with Psalm 23, where he says, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that forever indicates to me that he's talking about his eternal home. But here the psalmist says, one thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Now, how can we dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of our lives? We can't spend all day long every day in church. I think it means to dwell in his presence, to live with him, to do all that we do in company with Jesus Christ. And that's a scriptural idea from the New Testament. 1 Thessalonians 5:10 says, he died for us so that we, whether awake or asleep, might live in company with him. Everything I do is to be referred to the Lord, to be performed in his presence. And I've just been reading a wonderful book by Dietrich von Hildebrand, and all through the book, this concept of in the presence or in the sight or in the view of God is repeated. In the view of God, in the presence of God. And ever since I read that book, and it's a book that I'm going to go back and read again, and I think I read each chapter two or three times before I went on to the next chapter, but I've been trying to do exactly that. Everything that happens, everything that comes to my desk, every task that I have to perform, every talk that I have to give, every suitcase I have to pack, whatever I have to do. Lord, let me do this in company with you, in your presence. Let me look at this as you look at it. And when something distressing comes, immediately that thought has come to mind. It was Monday morning. Lars and I got home Sunday afternoon from Florida. And Monday morning at 5 o'clock Massachusetts time, my daughter called from California. Well, you know, when the phone rings at 5 o'clock, it's pretty unusual anyway. That's not an hour when we're usually sound asleep. But as soon as I heard her voice, I immediately realized it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why is she calling me? Well, it wasn't a major emergency, but her youngest child, who's only, he's almost 4 months old now, had been screaming for an hour and a half. And that's rather distressing, isn't it? Very distressing for a young, well, not so young, let's say middle-aged. I have a hard time realizing my daughter's middle-aged. She's almost 40. She's 37 now, but for her and her husband to be, they had been walking this child, you know, taking turns, rocking, walking, singing, talking, feeding, doing everything they could think of, and he was still screaming. So Valerie just called and said, Mama, please pray for Theo that we'll know what to do to calm him down. Obviously something is hurting him and we don't know quite what to do, etc. And then she told me that her oldest son, Walter, had had a very bad cough and he was on his third course of antibiotics and it hadn't stopped. And so these things distress a grandmother. And so I immediately, after I hung up the phone, I said, Lord, help me to look at this as you see it. Things look simpler that way, you know. All of a sudden, you get a different perspective. And even though I'm 3,000 miles away from my daughter, I'm not helpless. God encouraged me to remember that prayer works. Prayer is my participation, my living in company with Christ. It is a unifying principle of my life. I know what I want. I want the will of God. Whatever that means. And of course, none of us knows what it means for the coming day. We may know, we may think we know, and perhaps we do know, we find out that we did know, but we don't know what's going to happen, do we? As Lars and I were coming here tonight, we had to go make a detour in Magnolia because one street was blocked off. We have absolutely no idea what was going on, but there were four ambulances. There were fire trucks. There was an emergency truck with a boat on it that was coming past us with lights flashing, so we assume it must be either an ocean or a lake accident of some sort. We never know, do we? We never know. But we know the one who knows. And what a difference that ought to make in our lives. A unifying principle is what we need. And you know, I think one of the great temptations that the world thrusts in our direction daily is the lust for variety. The lust for variety. Why else could a hotel sell those brunches week after week after boring week? Because people want variety. It isn't that they couldn't make any one or two of those dishes at home if they wanted to, but they just love looking at 95 dishes. And you think of the waste, the stuff that goes onto people's plates that goes into the garbage pail, and the stuff that has to go into the garbage pail because nobody took it. There's something desperately amiss when we lust for variety. Think of the rest of the world. I lived with people who had a very simple principle of life. It was survival. If you've listened to my radio program, you may have heard me talk about my time with the Alka Indians. I lived for a year in a tribe called Alkas, where we had no walls on our houses, no floors and no furniture. Life is very simple. You never have any electric outages. We never had any plumbing problems because we didn't have any electricity or any plumbing. We never had to wash the windows since there were no walls and therefore no windows. You can sweep the mud floor with a broom made out of sticks, and you don't have any place to put things, so you don't have any things to speak of. I had one change of clothing, which I had hanging in a net up underneath my thatched roof, and that was all. I did have two plastic bowls. My daughter was living there, too. She was 3 years old. I had one aluminum pot, one knife, two spoons, and two plastic cups. And the Indians were just dumbfounded by this clutter. Why in the world do two people need two plastic bowls, two cups, two spoons, one knife, no forks, and one pot? They had, for a family of 10 or so, one pot. Period. No plates, no spoons, no knives, no forks. One pot. And they were perfectly healthy. I mean, they got along fine. They didn't need anything else. And as for clothes, they had a piece of string. One piece of string around their hips. Now, does that ever simplify life? Now, I'm not here to recommend that we all resort to that. But it did teach me some things. You know, when you realize that you're going to have to walk 3 days over the trail from the nearest airstrip, and you're going to carry what you're going to need on your back, life gets very simple. And I had reduced it to what I thought was the barest minimum, and I don't think I got there and found out there was anything I didn't really need, although I could have gotten along, as the Indians did, with a banana leaf for a plate. But if you're trying to eat soup, it doesn't work too well. Indians didn't eat soup. A unifying principle. Now, there's a second thing that I think we need to think about for simplifying our lives, and that is the paradox that we find in Mark 10:21. Jesus was talking to a young man, a rich young man, who had asked him what he must do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus said, "Why do you call me good? There is no one good but God. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not give false testimonies. Do not defraud. And honor your father and mother." "Teacher," he said, "all these things I have kept since I was a boy." And Jesus looked at him and loved him and said, "One thing you lack." And then he told him what the one condition was that he must fulfill if he was going to follow Jesus. He said, sell everything you have. Now, this was a rich young man. Think of this paradox. You lack something. Here's a man that had everything. There's one thing you lack, and in order to gain it, you've got to get rid of everything. Get rid of everything in order to gain the one thing you lack. Sell everything and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. He lacked, he must give, and then he would have. Have by giving. What could be more opposite to the world's way of thinking? You have by getting. No, Jesus said you will have it. Treasure in heaven, which is indestructible and permanent, if you will give everything you have. And then come and follow me. Jesus knew that this man would be bringing far too much baggage if he wanted to follow him, unless he fulfilled that condition first. And here's the sad part. The man's face fell. He went away sad because he had great wealth. Sad. Why was he sad? He had great wealth. Well, he wanted to eat his cake and have it too, didn't he? And he had far too many things. He was too rich to follow. And a lot of us are too busy to follow. Too cluttered to follow. Too smart to follow. We have a lot of things that this world considers valuable. And sometimes what Jesus is saying to us is, leave it, forget it, relinquish it. Then you will have treasure in heaven. When you have everything, you've missed the only thing that matters. And I don't know whether there's anyone here who ever wanted everything and got everything she ever wanted. But if you did, I think you would agree that everything you ever wanted was not enough. Everything you ever wanted did not bring that soul satisfaction that we all so desperately look for. Clutter is the evidence of discontent. I wonder when I go into people's houses where there's all sorts of little knickknacks around, I wonder how often it gets dusted. If it gets dusted often, and usually you can tell whether it does or not, I think of the time that it takes. All these little things that nobody really looks at because all you see is clutter if there's so much of it. And what do you need? How many of those things do you need? Now, I'm not for having a totally bare house. Please don't imagine anything of the sort. I think we're responsible to make our homes cozy, pleasant, comfortable, lovely to look at, in as much as it lies in us to do that. But clutter is not beauty, necessarily. So there is a third thing that we need, and that's quietness. And I want to give you another one of those one thing verses, Luke 10:42. You remember the story where Jesus went to supper at the home of Mary and Martha, and you remember how one of them was tearing around in the kitchen, trying to get everything just perfect for this perfect guest. And the other one was sitting at Jesus' feet. And Martha, like probably you and me, was very put out with the fact that her sister was just sitting there when there was all this work to do. And you remember that she came to the Lord and said, "Don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." I don't think for a moment that Jesus was chiding Martha because she was fixing supper. I'm sure he appreciated the meal that she fixed. His chiding was because she was anxious and worried and upset. And that's how we get, isn't it? Frantic, desperate, anxious, worried, upset. Mary was not worried because she was quiet. And I have found that that is a wonderful healing thing. When I'm feeling most worried and upset, just to go and sit down or kneel down or maybe stand alone somewhere in the presence of the Lord and just lift it up into His presence, into His view of things, into His perspective and say, Lord, quiet my heart about this. Help me. Help me to see this as You see it and listen to Him. Sit at His feet. Maybe you say, well, I don't have time to sit at His feet, and that was exactly what Martha would have said. Then something is radically wrong. Something has to be changed. And let's be honest with ourselves. We always do the things we really want to do bad enough. I saw a woman on television some years ago. She was, I believe, 30 years old, the mother of four children, and she had written The Definitive History of the Civil War. Huge, thick book of, I don't know, 1,000 pages or something. And the interviewer asked the question that you and I would have asked, how in the world did you do it? You've got four children and a husband and a house to take care of. How did you find the time? And she just smiled and shrugged and she said, everybody finds time to do what they want to do. And I think that's true. And would you believe it? I had a letter just last week from a young woman who is single. She lives alone. She is so frantic because she's so busy and she just can't find things to do, can't find time to do all the things that she wants to do and needs to do. And she's speaking of things that she wants to do in the church and time with the Lord and all that. But she told me in her letter, she gave me a rundown of her schedule, and it was a regular job. And I don't know really what she did when she got home at night, but she said she was just so busy. But on Saturday morning, she took 4 hours to run. And I thought, she wants to run, or she wouldn't be spending 4 hours at a time running. She did the Boston Marathon. You always find time to do what you want to do real bad. Mary's choice was to be quiet at Jesus' feet. Martha's choice was to be worried and to be angry with her sister. We need quietness. And the fourth thing, to simplify our lives, and perhaps you've already gotten lost, but the first is a unifying principle. The second is this paradox of getting by giving. And the fourth is directing your energies toward one thing. And for that, I would give you Paul's word in Philippians 3:13. One thing I do, forgetting what is behind and reaching, straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. His energies were directed. Think about where your energies are directed. In what direction do your energies go? Are you spending a lot of time trying to find out who you are? Well, to me, that one of the most boring questions in the world is, who am I? And I think it was Goethe who said, God only knows who I am, and may God preserve me from ever finding out. I say amen to that. God has shown me more than I can stand about myself. I don't really want to know a whole lot more. But I want to direct my energies toward knowing God, which the byproduct of which will be a revelation of myself that I need to have in order to correct things that need to be corrected and in order to change. Do you want to change? Now, some of you may have said amen to my question. Are you thinking, feeling that life has gotten too complicated and you'd like to simplify your life? But the great question is, what are you willing to change? How much are you willing to change? What kind of a price are you willing to pay? Another sign of the lust for variety is a garage sale. All you have to do is just have a look at anybody's garage sale, and what do you see there? A whole lot of stuff that people thought was going to bring them happiness, and they found maybe a few weeks or a few months, maybe even a few years of fun out of it. But all those golf clubs and snorkels and grills and exercise machines and gadgets and skis and bikes, did it bring them happiness? No. Once they've got the snorkel, then they've got to get the scuba diving equipment. And once they've gotten that, then they've got to do water skiing. And if they do water skiing, it has to be snow skiing. And only God knows what else. But the lust for variety is very obvious in the things that people are willing to get rid of. We must surrender all. Jesus said to the rich young man, you must sell everything you have. And in another place, Jesus says, unless you are prepared to sell everything you have, you cannot be my disciple. And I think Jesus was using what we might call hyperbole there, a figure of speech, which is an exaggeration. He doesn't necessarily require all of us to sell everything we have. He might. Some of us, individuals, but he is telling us, put it at my disposal. Let me decide. And if you really are earnest about wanting to simplify your life and you want to get right down to business with the physical clutter in your house, go into the first room that you want to clean up, or open the first drawer if you can't even think about cleaning a whole room. Just open one closet or one drawer and look at it with God. How does it look? I had a friend who was the absolute epitome of neatness in Bible school, and she explained to me why. She said, if the Lord comes, I would not want my non-Christian friends seeing my room in a mess. It wouldn't be much of a testimony. Well, think about that. Travel light. Let go of your resentments, your emotional baggage. Find some quietness. It is an absolute necessity for spiritual growth. If you haven't got time to spend time alone with the Lord, then you're too busy. You need to cut something out. Maybe you need to go to bed earlier. I read recently that people who get 3 hours of sleep before midnight get twice as much work done as the people who don't, even if they sleep the same number of hours. For some reason, there's a physiological necessity of hours of sleep before midnight. So maybe you need to think about that. Go to bed, try going to bed at 9 o'clock and getting up at 5 and see what happens. Time to think, to listen, and to pray uninterrupted. Is there a time in your day that you can do that besides early in the morning? Be honest. And a woman's special battleground is another area of tremendous clutter, and that is our emotional life. We are creatures of feelings. We want to act on feelings rather than on principle. Nerves, imaginings. And of course, when that phone call came at 5 o'clock on Monday, my imagination went bananas right away. I'm a woman of tremendous imaginations, and it's the imaginations that cause the anxiety. Jesus said, don't think about tomorrow. Just do what you're supposed to do today. Now, what was I supposed to do right that minute? Pray. Was there anything else I could do? No, other than worry, which is the more fruitful. Can anybody here think of anything that worry has ever once accomplished in your life? Can you remember what you were worrying about on Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock? Whatever it was probably didn't happen, probably isn't going to happen, and you've already forgotten it. Well, one rule for my life is do the next thing, and that is so simplifying. You know, when I come home from a trip and I see that pile of work, instead of getting all in a stew and thinking, oh, what am I going to do? I can't possibly handle all this. I just say, Lord, I only have one thing to do. I only have one thing to do. Your will. Lord, what do you want me to do first? And he shows me. You know, if you're really dead serious about this, God does meet us where we are. Where are you? God knows. What is the clutter in your life? You know, and God knows, and very likely your husband or a few other people know too. Bring it to God. And then he will show you one thing to do. It's a great mistake to think you have to do everything at once. You know you can't. So if you think, well, I don't know where to begin. Did you ever think of praying about where to begin? It's amazing how God answers simple prayers like that. You don't have to be very spiritual to figure that one out. Paul says, all I care for is to know Christ. There may be some here tonight who don't know Christ. I just want to testify, as a woman who sought to walk with the Lord for more than 50 years, to the fact that there is joy, which the Bible calls unspeakable. There is peace that Jesus says only he can give. My peace I give to you, not as the world giveth. Is there peace in your heart? Jesus said, come to me, you who are tired and overburdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. For I am gentle and humble in heart. I left out the part. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. I pray that if there is one here tonight who doesn't know the Lord, or perhaps thought she did and realizes that she doesn't know him well enough, I would hope that you would direct your energies toward knowing him, that you would find him as that unifying principle in your life, that you would be able to go home tonight and find a little quietness in which to surrender to him. All I care for is to know Christ, the Apostle Paul said, and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings. It's worth it. It's the most wonderful life in the world. And it is an uncluttered life. It's simple. The most simplifying principle is to direct all your energies toward knowing God.